Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the second hour of Up North News for this Wednesday, August 17th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Luke Mathers, and joined now by State Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay, who's running for re-election this fall after first being elected in 2020. Representative, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Yeah, and we'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly a little later on in this hour. But Representative Shelton, tell folks a little bit about yourself, because you are still a relatively new state lawmaker, but you're one who is certainly making your mark and helping out your colleagues around the state. So let's learn a little bit more about you.
Thanks, Pat. Yeah, you know, I'm a mom. I've got an 11 and a 14-year-old. I'm a teacher by trade. I taught K-12 and higher education. And I come up through community organizing and advocacy. In 2016, after the Trump election, started organizing here with a local group called Black Lives United and doing some work with Women's March Wisconsin. So my journey through politics is certainly newer. I was always a voter and someone who cared about politics, but I wanted to get more involved and wanted to sort of raise the voices of my community members that I felt like were being ignored. So I was appointed and then ran for a seat on the Green Bay School Board in 2019. And then in 2020, I decided to primary the former representative to the 90th, who was a Democrat. I beat him in the primary and then went on to the general. So I'm just finishing up my first term in the state assembly, representing, generally speaking, the east and west sides of the city of Green Bay. I care so much about so many issues in the communities that we serve. But right now, what people are talking about is, you know, rising costs, public education, reproductive justice and abortion rights, safe communities and schools. These are really bread and butter issues. And it's just an honor to be able to serve the people of my district every day.
I'm going to put this in a way that probably puts the ball on a big old tee for you, but it has to be asked. You have an 11 and a 14-year-old at home. And in our last hour, we talked to one of your colleagues, Sarah Rodriguez, also a working mom. I've talked to, of course, to Kristen Lyerly at length, and I've served in the legislature with a number of working moms. And so this is no knock that, you know, any working parent can also go into politics, but there are a lot of working moms and more all the time. Why is it that you try to shoehorn one more thing into an already busy life?
Look, I think Sarah says this a lot, and I'm going to repeat what she said, which is, if you want to get something done, you give it to a mom. And I think moms are uniquely positioned. We know what it takes. We're gritty. We can multitask. And we are passionate about building a future that not only works for our families, but for other families and for our kids. And, you know, I want to be a part of the solutions, part of the solution to creating a Wisconsin that works for the many rather than the few. My kids go to school every day and they are aware of the many issues. They're concerned about their safety. They're concerned about their fellow students. That, you know, we have 1,000 students in the Green Bay School District that on any given day are experiencing homelessness. So the issues are real and our kids see that. And I want them to know that I'm going to fight for their future. And I think they're proud of me. You know, maybe my 14-year-old isn't, she's a little bit, you know, unsure right now about politics, but I want them to know that they can get involved when they feel passionate about issues.
I remember that discussion. My daughters were 14 and 16 at the time, or 13 and 15. And I was pleasantly surprised at how they, it's like they already knew me. They already knew, you know, that some of us just care, have to do a little bit more. Have yours taken as well as mine did to the notion of throwing parade candy or otherwise participating in American democracy?
You know, in terms of parades, Pat, it's really funny. Green Bay is not a big parade community. I have, in fact, never walked in a parade. So they don't know about throwing candy. But, you know, we try to talk to them about, you know, organizing and talking to their friends and getting out and talking about key issues. My daughter, she's 14. You know, she cares deeply about choice and reproductive care. My son is very interested in, you know, people having enough money to cover the basics. And again, I just want them to build up the muscle to be able to talk about these different issues, because our kids are aware of it and they need to be talking about it too, whether it's in their home or in their friendship circles.
Let me give you an idea of what it's like when a working mom is in one of these parades. My very first one was in Little Boyd, Wisconsin, along Highway 29. I was nervous. My wife was even more nervous, but she had a convertible and she volunteered to drive it. And the kids, after much debate, we settled on Starbursts or the perfect parade candy, because they're individual, you know, individually wrapped and won't get dirty. You know, the candy won't get dirty if you throw them. So we really thought this out. And I was a little nervous, but it went okay, you know, shaking hands along the route. But then I came to realize I was not the star of that particular contingent, because when you're married to an OBGYN, all I heard during that parade was, "Hi, Dr. Kreitlow. Hi," and people are holding up the babies that she had delivered. And by the end of it, my new staff person with the State Senate Democratic Committee, I think asked somewhat sincerely if I would consider letting her run in my place on the ballot. So never let it be said that working moms, you know, can't do a parade if and when you choose to.
I believe I have the skill set for it if and when it happens.
we are talking to State Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay. We will visit a bit more about what's happening in state politics, and we'll be joined a little later by Kristen Lyerly. All coming up. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back. If you'd like to reach the show, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. A new Marquette poll is going to be coming out later today. So tomorrow, analyst Joe Zepecki will join us to give us a feel for what the political pulse of Wisconsin is like these days. And speaking of taking a pulse, one Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us, as she often does, on Wednesdays. How are you?
Good morning. My pulse is racing because I am loaded up with coffee and so ready to go today. I'm really excited about our show.
Well, that's because you were kind enough to not only arrange for Representative Christina Shelton to join us in this hour, but we have a special guest next hour as well.
Yeah, we sure do. It's, you know, the theme today is, in my mind anyway, it's this cohort of incredible women who ran for assembly together in 2020 and the different outcomes. So we saw Sarah Rodriguez, who won her seat in a difficult district down in Milwaukee, and now she's going to be our next lieutenant governor. We've got Rep. Shelton with us this morning. Amazing. And Christina won up here in Green Bay and is part of the, as we were discussing on the commercial break, the dream team of the Kristen Christina. I don't know who's running in what district, but I'm going to vote for that fabulous gal. And then next hour, it's Jessica Katzenmeyer, who is just a history-making candidate and really an incredible human being. So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff happening.
So we're going to continue that with our conversation with Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay. And as we can talk at length, as we have previously, about things that either Republicans have done or Republicans have blocked. But as you know, we've all knocked on many doors. And people are more interested in, you know, what are you doing? What are you proposing? What are you for? What are you going to do for us? And for you, Representative Shelton, that starts with the Healthy School Meals for All Act. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this bill and the work that we've been doing around it is my favorite part of my job every day in the legislature. So a little bit of a backstory. Before I was in the legislature, I was working for a national nonprofit, working with large urban school districts around the country on school meals, mostly breakfast at the time, but looking at ways to ensure that every kid has access to breakfast and lunch and that we're investing in the food system. So if you remember back in March of 2020, when the pandemic hit, schools shut down and the USDA updated their guidance so that districts could pivot on a dime, serve meals to families and kids without checking their income levels. We basically did something we were told for years that we couldn't do, and that was to just feed people and feed kids and families breakfast and lunch. And it gave some flexibility with the delivery models. I remember I was on the Green Bay School Board over at Franklin Middle School, putting meals in people's trunks to make sure that people who were food insecure had access. So we did something that was revolutionary, and we saw incredible benefits for districts around the country, around the state and around the country. It uplifted food service workers, which are some of the lowest paid workers in school districts. We saw record profit coming into food service departments, which allowed them to locally source fresh fruits and vegetables. It expanded the farm to school programs. So just incredible benefits. Well, unfortunately, those benefits ended at the end of this past June. And we knew last year that those benefits were going to come to an end. So what we did is we proposed a bill that would bring the state GPR dollars to cover that gap of families and kids that don't qualify for free and reduced, to ensure that every kid in the state of Wisconsin has access to a free breakfast and lunch every single day. The best part about this job, or about this legislative bill, is we built out the Healthy School Meals for All Coalition, and it has almost 100 members right now across the state. So we're working with the Wisconsin SNA. We're working with this incredible intersection of grassroots organizations who are understanding that if we are going to send our kids every day to school, that school meals are just as important to learning as books, pencils, and, you know, recess equipment. So it's really exciting, and it's growing, and we're building momentum, and I think we're getting some traction.
Is this something that you want to make a focus of the next session, the state budget, no matter who wins the governor's race, no matter who is controlling the legislature? Do you feel it's got that kind of bipartisan attraction?
Well, look, we know that bipartisan attraction in the state of Wisconsin is an incredibly difficult thing, but we're going to keep at it. We are not swayed by this, you know, argument that it's working, that the school meals program is working fine the way it is. We know that that's not true. California just passed a bill that would expand and do exactly what we're aiming to do here in Wisconsin. In fact, we actually worked with California to understand their draft bill and how they went through the process and how they built up momentum. So yeah, absolutely. We're going to keep this going. You know, the other thing that the coalition is doing is looking at lobbying our federal delegation. You know, we met with Representative Mike Gallagher. We met with Senator Tammy Baldwin to talk about this issue. So our job as a coalition is to say, these are the different levers that we can push and pull in front of us. The bill is one way, but can we meet with the governor's team and encourage that to be through the budgetary process? Can we encourage our DC representatives and senators to take action? So we're going to keep at it because we know it matters.
I feel like every time that I talk with Republican leaders, their first question is always, how much is it going to cost? Where is it going to come from? So can you speak to the financial aspect? What is the burden going to be on Wisconsinites for feeding all of these kids in school?
That's always the first question, Dr. Lyerly, and I'll start by saying this. Regardless of what it costs, it's worth it. It is worth it to feed kids because hungry kids can't learn and hungry kids aren't well. So at the baseline, if our kids' needs aren't met every single day, then it's a wash to send them into a math classroom and expect them to be their best. So that's the first thing. The other part is, as you know, we're sitting on $5.4 billion in surplus revenue at the state. So we have the funds to start advancing some of these really great ideas that we know work. The other part of it is, yes, there is a price tag. It's a little bit difficult to nail down because the way that the formula works is the more you maximize federal reimbursements through the free and reduced pay meals, the more you can maximize that, the lower the coverage is going to be at the state. So we want to maximize that so that the state kind of comes in with that gap. It has been estimated at about $100 million. But with some of the movement in D.C., we think that's actually going to come in lower the next time that we introduce this bill in the next biennium. So it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game because we're working alongside the feds. But regardless, one, we have the money, and two, we know it works. So we know it's a good idea.
And yet we have seen school districts in the Waukesha area and elsewhere essentially treating school lunch and school breakfast as a luxury. You know, we make it compulsory for kids to attend school, but we don't make it compulsory that they have adequate food and nutrition. So for all of the work you've done to get this far, are you concerned that you're still going to run up against a mindset that believes that either school lunches should be, you know, privatized, or everybody should pack a brown bag, even if they're, you know, their parents are just getting off a third shift job or something?
Yeah, look, we have to change hearts and minds and culture as we're also changing legislative, you know, priorities and bills that we're drafting. Absolutely. And look, this is a mom who's working three jobs, like you just said, Pat, who maybe can cover a meal, a breakfast for their kid or a lunch for their kid, but doesn't have the time to do it. And I know that I went through that last year when my kids were able to eat for free at school. And I was like, you know what? Great. You're going to get to go eat every day with your friends and you're going to have the same meal. It ends lunch shaming. It ends school lunch debt. But the best part about this is what the work that we're doing is we are centering food service workers and all that we're doing. One, in fact, one of the subgroups of the coalition is looking at wages, working conditions, and benefits of food service workers. And what we've basically come down to is you can't revolutionize school meals until you revolutionize the working conditions of food service workers. These are people who have been deprofessionalized, defunded, and undervalued, not because school districts are aiming to do that, but because we just are not providing enough revenue for them to cover the basics. Their margin is so incredibly thin that when you think about scratch cooking or cooking in the kitchen or expanding healthy options, it's incredibly difficult. And I think we hear from people all the time that say, I want school meals to be healthier. And I say, yep, absolutely. We have to invest in the system to be able to do that.
Are you saying that we have to solve some of these foundational problems in order to make this happen? We can't just stick more Band-Aids on it?
Kristen, you know, you took the words out of my mouth. Here's the deal. Rugged individualism isn't going to get us out of societal problems. I mean, no, isn't that the case? And it's so funny. I mean, you think about food. I mean, food and eating is a communal experience. And yet we send our kids to school and we say, everybody, you know, gets to participate in math and have a book and a pencil and have what they need. But oh, by the way, if you're hungry, good luck to you. And, you know, and if you can't afford it, then we're going to give you a different meal. And that's not how we do things in the Green Bay district, but we do have a lot of differences in districts and it creates a lot of shame and pain in our communities.
Well, it's indicative of something larger. And that is the way that I like to put it is, you know, those who hate government most should be trusted least to run it. They will strangle it. They'll starve it of resources to somehow prove, in quotes, that it doesn't work. You saw an example of that earlier this month where at a day-long hearing, people who've been seeking occupational licenses and waiting and waiting and waiting, waited to testify to the Joint Finance Committee because they have the power to fix this. They have the power to fix it right away, and they just won't. Can you tell us more about that?
Oh my gosh, Pat. I mean, look, the Wisconsin GOP is so great at creating and manufacturing crises over and over again, and then pointing the finger in every other direction other than those who can actually fix it. Look, they have $36 million in program revenue that came from licensing. They need permission from JFC, DSPS to hire more and to spend this money. Our legislative office gets calls every single day. My chief of staff is spending more time trying to figure out the complexity of this system that if, again, talking about investing in systems and in people, if we could infuse additional revenue and additional staff, we could actually fix this and streamline it. But to your point, Pat, I don't believe that they want to do that. I don't believe that they want things to work because it goes against their narrative that government can't function.
And that's why we have to come back with reminders like this. So let's say it again. This is not new money. This is not some kind of new tax. This is $36 million in revenue already in that account. It just needs essentially, and what had always been, more or less a rubber stamp from Joint Finance to say, yep, we see it. We vouch for it. Let's send it out the door. And instead, they are obstructing it. That is one of several examples.
Yes, sir. Starving the system. And I know there was a representative up here in Northeast Wisconsin who said, you know, throwing money at it isn't going to solve it. And I laughed out loud. I mean, you have people who need additional staff and updated programs and systems. And if you divest from these systems, it's no surprise that they're going to be gummed up, ineffective, and frustrating for people. And then people in my community and our communities across the state say, look, the government isn't functioning. They can't do anything. So it reinforces this negative narrative that they've set out. And we have to do all we can to set the record straight.
Transparency and communication. That's what we're all about here on Up North Radio.
Well, we will continue this conversation in just a bit with Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay and Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We will get into a bit more about some of the legislative issues and some of the larger issues out there that are framing this election as both of these women work to get more people elected who are going to work for us and for a functional government. This is Up North News. We'll be back.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Dodgers, 5-4. No play again tonight. And then again on Thursday afternoon. We are visiting with State Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay, and Dr. Kristen Lyerly is with us as well. And so, Kristen, since Kristen and Christina, since you're here, I want to get into a couple of matters related to the repeal of Roe v. Wade, what that means for things in the state as well as in the election. The headline in the Green Bay Press Gazette today says, Wisconsin abortion ban leaves OBGYNs confused about what they can do for patients when pregnancies go wrong. And obviously, Kristen, with you being an OBGYN, me being married to one, we're familiar with this. But tell us a bit about what is a bit more mysterious now. And then we'll ask Christina about, you know, what can be changed about that in Wisconsin.
Hey, I think to the general public, when they think about abortion, they think about it in political terms and it feels very black and white. But for people who have experienced pregnancy complications, or certainly the one in four people, women in this country who have had an abortion, one in four, that's not a small number. I think there's a different level of understanding. And especially for us as OBGYNs, pregnancy is, it's a joyful time. But it's also a terrifying time for many people. And it's a complicated, confusing time with lots of decision making as you're trying to figure out what is the best route for you and for your baby and for your family within the context of your community. So conditions arise, and increasingly so as we become more obese with more chronic health problems, getting pregnant later in life, conditions arise that put our lives and our pregnancies in danger. And as a physician or a midwife, we have to have the ability to be nimble and respect our patients' wishes and give them the ability to make decisions about their own healthcare interests, again, within the context of their own lives.
And yet the state now is ruled by an abortion ban that was written into law in 1849. Mm-hmm. And today's generation of OBGYNs and nurses and parents and others have to deal with this. Representative Shelton, we know that there's not going to be a federal resolution for a while now. There's going to be a patchwork of 50 states that either do more or less for women when it comes to the freedom to make their decisions on reproductive health care. What is it that you are proposing and that others are proposing be done in Wisconsin? What's the best we can do under the circumstances we now live in?
Well, I mean, it's just heart-wrenching. You hear these stories. I had a friend of mine who just had a baby a few weeks ago, and I was terrified for her about the decisions that, you know, were maybe going to have to be made to save her life or save the life of her baby. And these are, there's an infinite number of circumstances and scenarios that Dr. Lyerly and physicians like her have to navigate with patients. And to say that, politicians should be a part of that decision making or the complexity of those decisions is just absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. Look, as a state, we could be taking action today. The governor has begged us to come back into session to do that. We could pass the Abortion Rights Preservation Act that would repeal the 1849, the archaic law criminalizing abortion, making it a felony. We could be taking out Medicaid expansion. We could be expanding Badger Care. We could be talking and passing funding for maternal health health care and programs. There's so much we could be doing. And instead, the Republican GOP gaveled out, sent us all home for a 6-month vacation so that they could campaign. And when I was elected in 2020, people want me to work. They want me to work for them and with them. And for us to be sitting on our hands, pretending like there's nothing we could be doing is devastating, and women and people are going to die because of it.
And yet it could get worse. And for this next bit, I want to thank Judd Lounsbery, who writes for The Progressive and who notes for us that Pro-Life Wisconsin, which gave gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels a rare 100% rating, Pro-Life Wisconsin states on their website that the pill is an abortifacient. And these are Tim Michaels' exact answers to his candidate questionnaire from Pro-Life Wisconsin. Do you believe that human life begins at fertilization, conception? Answer, yes. No, yes, but no, nothing. Yes. Question, do you believe that unborn children deserve complete legal protection from abortion at any stage of the pregnancy beginning at fertilization, conception? Again, yes. Will you introduce a human life amendment to the Constitution that defines a person as a human beginning at conception? Answer, yes. And will you vote against confirmation for any judge who does not believe in protecting the unborn? That should be a disqualifying question right there. That should not be asked about a judge unless you are such a strict single issue group that you feel that that is a normal question. And Michael's answer is one word, yes. Those answers are alone, in my view, are disqualifying for anybody that wants to serve as governor. Representative Shelton, I can only imagine this doesn't, this really affects what you're saying to people when campaigning for yourself and for Governor Evers and for other candidates this fall.
Look, this is about control. This is about controlling families and women and the decisions that we make. It is absolutely disgusting. You know, if this was actually about, you know, women and babies, then we would be fully investing in healthcare and childcare and the child tax care credit and paid family medical leave. We would be having these conversations. And what's fascinating is they're trying to pivot to some of that. And it's laughable because they have failed over and over again to take any meaningful action to help working families. And, you know, what I say to people every day is, look, if whether you are wanting to have a family, or you're looking to do in vitro, or you know, you're not someone who's going to be pregnant, this is going to affect you, your family, your neighborhood, your community. And to take choices away from people that are complicated and difficult, but to take those away from women and families is going to be devastating to the state of Wisconsin and to Wisconsinites. Kristen, I'm curious what your thoughts are in response to some of this.
I want to say so many things all at the same time. Yeah. You know, the dog finally caught the car. And I think the Republicans are trying to figure out what to do now because they realize that people don't like this. It makes people, when they really think about it, it makes people uncomfortable. And, you know, Tim Michaels, all of those comments just reflect a fundamental lack of knowledge and understanding of what this really means. Pro-Life Wisconsin has issued statements. There's something in the Press Gazette this morning about their legislative liaison, Matt Sandy, says, well, if you are diagnosed with a fetus that has a small head, you can just do a C-section. So that might sound normal to a layperson, but to me, I'm thinking, that doesn't make any sense at all. It has nothing to do with delivery. It has everything to do with how do you want to manage that complicated pregnancy? What does that mean to you? There is so much more than you can just do a C-section. Like, what is he even talking about? Those things don't make sense. And they put out a statement recently talking about how no, there is never a reason that the life of the mother would be in danger because of a pregnancy. And that is what? Fundamentally wrong. Like, fundamentally wrong. I mean, when you look at how little politicians understand about pregnancy, look at this bill that was released in Ohio or was introduced in Ohio a couple of years ago, where an ectopic pregnancy, a pregnancy located outside of the uterus where it can grow and become an actual viable pregnancy, an ectopic pregnancy would have to be moved from the fallopian tube or wherever it was implanted and put back in the uterus.
That's not a thing.
It's not a thing. Never been done. It's not possible, but they introduced it as legislation and it got some traction. So how can we do a thing that's impossible? And why are they even having these conversations?
It really is. I mean, it is legislators passing a bill that says, well, if the heart stops beating, you know, just shock the kidney and make the kidney, you know, pump the blood instead. It is that fundamentally laughably not biologically ridiculous.
I'd like to shock that person's kidneys.
But no, it takes us. Go ahead, Christine.
It's all wrapped up in violence, right? I mean, this is violent towards women. This is violent towards family. This is violent towards the babies. The whole process, right? And to think that women are making decisions about their bodies and about their pregnancies haphazardly without the weighing of consequences. I mean, I remember being pregnant, every person, whether it's a planned pregnancy or not, you are going into those doctor's visits and the weight of your decision and everything that you do, it wears on you. And whether you choose to end that pregnancy or carry it full term, or if there's a fetal anomaly, everyone deserves to be able to make that decision that's right for them. I don't judge anyone for the decision. I just believe they should be able to have that. And the rhetoric around this belief that women are ending, you know, late-term pregnancies, I mean, it's violent, it's wrong, it's incorrect. And it is so pervasive, to your point. I mean, we have people that are making laws around this. Although I have to say, I loved the law, and it was a Democrat. He put out a bill that said if they were going to pass this, you know, end abortion, that they should pass a bill that would make it illegal to fund erectile dysfunction drugs. He said if it's God's will, then this is also God's will.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go theocracy, you know, go all the way, I guess.
But I mean, really, you can take that argument so far. I mean, if it's God's will, then where is science? Where does science play into that? And I just think that's the question.
Exactly. You're so right. And that takes all of this takes time away from the things that people can actually need in their day-to-day lives. And let's just start with healthcare. You know, the Badger Care Public Option Act that's out there. The things that we can do to strengthen healthcare, Christina.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the Badger Care Public Option Act, this was a bill that Mayor Eric Ginrich, who's the mayor of Green Bay, he was in the assembly prior to me. He was my predecessor. He had a Badger Care Option Act. We built on it. We actually added a provision in there that would allow small businesses with less than 50 employees to buy into Badger Care. We were talking to small businesses yesterday with Main Street Alliance. They had a meeting and they were talking about, we want to do the right thing. Our employees deserve healthcare. They need it. They need it for their children and themselves. We know they're going to get sick, but we just can't afford it. And so, you know, what I see over and over again is Democrats taking the voices and the feedback and the perspective of their constituents, using that as a catalyst to draft common sense bills that also, by the way, are widely supported by the state of Wisconsin. You think about legalizing cannabis. I mean, overwhelming support. Expanding Medicaid, overwhelming support. Fully funding public schools and increasing reimbursement rates for special ed, overwhelming support. And it's just important for people to know that Democrats are fighting for them. And it's because of gerrymandering and the rigged system that the Republicans have set up here in the state that we can't get it done. But that doesn't mean we can give up hope. We have to keep fighting for these things because it's the right thing to do.
This was your recent tweet. You said progressive policies are popular and great for working people and the planet, too. Gerrymandering, capitalism, money in politics, and really bad headlines gaslight us into thinking otherwise. We win by doubling down on democracy, expanding freedoms, and not sliding to the mushy middle.
Yeah.
This really is no time for the mushy middle.
There is no mushy middle. And look, people don't want mushy middle. They want change. They want us to build an economy that works for everyone and also prepares us for climate change. You know, money in politics is such an incredibly destructive factor that has been unleashed on us since the 2010 Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court. I mean, billions of dollars of money flowing into campaigns. It's unbelievable. But I tell people all the time, we are being gaslighted into thinking that, you know, Northeast Wisconsin is deeply red. We are progressive. We are democratic. We are here, but we have to band together and we have to have each other's backs to have courage to say, no, I'm a Democrat and I'm proud of it. And these are popular policies.
Speaking of gaslighting people into believing that there was election fraud, in just, you know, about 10 seconds or so, any final thoughts on the end of the Michael Gableman investigation, quote unquote?
Thank God. $1.1 million. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's money that we won't get back, all in the name of a gaslighting exercise. State Assembly Rep. Christina Shelton of Green Bay, this was fun. Thanks so much. I hope we can do it again soon.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Oh, our pleasure. We will take a break. Kristen Lyerly sticks around, and then we will have more in our next hour as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. I don't know if this Yacht Rock thing is going to, you know, actually attract our demographic, or if people are just hitting stop in droves over here. I guess we know where Dr. Lyerly is on Yacht Rock.
I love Yacht Rock. I really do.
So again, this was not our intent. It was, you know, one of many genres that we're going to play here. But Luke, like a dog on a bone now, is just, you know, becoming, or has become, the most passive aggressive radio producer in the state today.
I'm just trying to find the good tone of Yacht Rock. What Yacht Rock you like, so that I can move on and find other. I also played Glory Days.
Can we get some LRB?
Okay, LRB. All right, I'll keep an eye out.
Wait. Are you trying to say Little River Band is a good example of Yacht Rock? It's an example, but is good that you would listen to it?
Oh yeah.
All right. Let's go through some examples here, folks, because it turns out if you Google up, you know, best or worst Yacht Rock songs, there's no lack of websites that want to drag you back kicking and screaming to the mid to late 1970s, early 80s, and either rank some songs or give some examples. So I'm just going to throw a few out, and Kristen's going to tell me if you like it, don't like it. Luke's going to tell us if he's heard of it, has never heard of it, or actually knows the remake that somebody did instead.
There's a sample Luke is going to find.
Yeah.
And that'll be the next hour.
There you go. So let's see. This particular one, smoothradio.com. Oh, God, I feel like I have to do the whole segment that way.
Oh, my God. I'm so in love with this segment. I can't wait. Keep going.
Smoothradio.com says the number 20 song on their list is Player with Baby Come Back.
Oh, any kind of fool could see. There was something.
Oh, I did not realize this was a karaoke segment
about
here.
You. That is so Yacht Rock. Yes.
All right.
And I have heard of it. I have heard of it. So.
Okay. Now, they've got Steely Dan at number 19 with FM. Just so you know, from my standpoint, Steely Dan would occupy spots like 1 through 10 on the list.
That's good to know.
One of my favorites of all. If I had a theme song, it would be Deacon Blues. You know, anyway. They've got Bobby Goldsboro Summer on there. No. How is Kenny Loggins Heart to Heart way down at number 17? That's about as Yacht Rocky as it gets, don't you think?
Oh, I do love that one.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm going to go through, you know, Boss Skaggs, Lowdown. That, you know, Boss Skaggs is classic. Mm-hmm. Luke, you ever hear Boss Skaggs?
I know the name, but I don't know if I could tell you any songs, like specifically.
That's Boz with a Z.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I like Georgia from the 1970s is my favorite. Steve Winwood, Valerie. I guess I never thought of that as in the Yacht Rock playlist, but.
That seems a little late for Yacht Rock.
It does. It does, didn't it? So does Rosanna by Toto. And I think what's happened is they've realized there's kind of a limited playlist. You know, it's a finite playlist. So we're kind of going to push the envelope. Now it's 1982. Now it's 1983, you know.
So what about Africa? Just to go full Toto on you.
Yeah, I mean, anything by Toto. Is it too late for the Yacht Rock, you know, era? It's too late for the era, but not too late for the genre. How about that? Because they can, you can throw things on later and call it yacht rock. You know,
well, it can be like the dinosaurs thing. You can have like the early, mid, and late. So
yeah,
like,
I think that now this
like
list,
late yacht rock era.
This list is going too late because they've got Chicago's "Hard to Say I'm Sorry." They've got Michael Jackson's "Human Nature" from the Thriller album.
No,
Thriller is completely outside of it. Now, number 10 on this list. This is it. The Doobie Brothers, "What a Fool Believes."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is nothing more, you know, yachty other than the number 9 entry on their list, which Luke has already played, "Sailing" by Christopher Cross.
Takes me away.
You groaned about that one though. I played it and you said it wasn't a good it wasn't good yacht rock.
Oh no, it's the quintessential yacht rock tune. You're on a boat, you're sailing. I just can't stand the song. Is it in the genre? Yes. Will I ever play it willingly? Oh hell no.
Noted.
Pat would like to substitute a different Christopher Cross song.
What would you throw in?
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Okay, because I mean, "Ride Like the Wind," you know, has certainly been on there as well. Number 6 on the list fits in perfectly. Seals and Crofts, "Summer Breeze."
Oh yeah,
and we've played that one. Actually, I've played a remix version of it that came out a few years ago that really improved on it. I'm not the world's biggest fan of the original version, but somebody remixed it, gave the orchestration a little bit more depth, and it's actually a very pleasant song. It no longer, you know, feels so dated. Christopher Cross, "Ride Like the Wind" is number 5. Number 4 from the Eagles, "I Can't Tell You Why." Which I guess, yeah, I mean, that's Timothy B. Schmidt, you know, it's basically, you know, sounding somewhat like Smokey Robinson, you know. It's a great tune. Jerry Rafferty and Baker Street, that it's so cliche for classic rock that even Luke here has probably heard Baker Street.
Yes.
Does not know that Jerry Rafferty was also part of Steeler's Wheel, which did "Stuck in the Middle with You." And I'm blanking out on what other Jerry Rafferty hit you might know here. Here at number 2 is Michael McDonald and "Sweet Freedom." But again, that's 1986, I believe. There's a lot of other Michael McDonald you could put on that particular list.
I keep forgetting you're not in love anymore. How about
right.
that one?
Wouldn't that be that would be your number 1?
"Things Will Never Be the Same Again." I'm loving this microphone right now.
And yet, at number one is one of my favorite groups, but I don't think qualifies as yacht rock. And that would be Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates, and they've got "I Can't Go For That, No Can Do." Again, two 80s to really qualify as yacht rock. But more importantly, I'm not sure that any, you know, blue-eyed soul or you know, related genres qualify in the way that Christopher Cross, Sailing, or Michael McDonald does. So I'm not sure that what I would say about Hall & Oates at number one is "I Can't Go For That, No Can Do."
Sarah Smile.
Sarah with Smile would fit in because that's 1976, you know, so you're smack in the middle of it. And yeah, that I could hear.
"She's Gone."
You're getting closer now. Now it's just love ballads, which, you know, you can have love ballads anytime.
"She's Gone." Sing it with me, Pat.
Luke, are
you? I know you know the words.
Luke, are you enlightened or frightened at this point? Where are we at with you?
Both. Can I be both?
Hey.
I was going to say, very informative and a little scared.
Okay, good. Well, all we're going to do then, this is only going to encourage us in future segments, is to pull up other lists or the ones that our listeners send in. And we'll come up with the quintessential yacht rock list for, you know, the Up North News morning radio show.
Yes!
And look at this. We used up all of the time here that we couldn't follow up on Kristen's idea that maybe we need to do a yoga class as well. And we'll probably get to that in our next hour, unless that giant meteor I'm rooting for suddenly hits us. Back with more, including State Senate candidate Jessica Katzenmeier, next. You're up north. You're